Hello, Cardinals fans. Welcome. It's the Redbird Reboot. I'm Blake Murphy. You can follow all of us here at Blake Murphy 7. I've got my co-host, who I'm getting added over here, Marcos Labrada, aka Pancake Soul. And we've, of course, got two of our awesome members of the Cardinals community on with us here to kind of have a four-way panel. We've got, of course, up top, Joe Gamo, the Cardinal Rule, a Cardinal YouTuber who's able to kind of go through a lot of stuff with PFF. And, of course, also writes with me for Revenge of the Birds, has his own awesome Red Rain podcast. Walter Mitchell at WB Mitch. Guys, it's great to have everyone on together. I know there's been a lot of work in trying to find the best time. Super excited to have you all on today.
Yeah, thanks for
Thank you,
having
Blake.
us. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Walter. After you.
No, you, pal.
All right. It's great to be with you guys. I've worked with all of you in different capacities before. So it's a joy to get to hang out with you guys.
Same, and great to be with the reboot staff. Really proud of you guys, and we're covering it from all angles, and with, of course, Joe the Pro. This is a good panel. Great panel, and looking forward to getting started.
Definitely here. Let's go ahead and get started with talking about the game yesterday. Cardinals do fall 26-9 to the Los Angeles Rams. We've got some guests on, Marcos. I probably want to hear some of your thoughts first, but let's just go over kind of the basic takeaways that you felt like were in that game, because it felt like through the first half, you saw your typical Cardinals. Second half, the game got out of hand, as has been prone to do, unfortunately. What are some of the at least thoughts here? And then we can listen to what Joe and Walter have to say for their thoughts.
They just went ahead and just crack tossed our defense into oblivion. So, as far as like being able to defend the run, that's always been a weakness of the Cardinals. So it's not getting any better, unfortunately, because of the fact that like their defensive ends are not like athletic enough to be able to kind of seal the run back in. And I know that back then we used to have this box the run in philosophy, where now I believe we're having more of a spill it outside. So that's what effectively happened in the second half, was they just Kyrie Williams or Kyrene Williams took over, that just kept running the ball, gashing us to the outside with crack toss or just in the inside. And we need to find a better effective way to be able to stop the run. And unfortunately, our corners were exposed in the way they did. I just have a question about, why were they trying to run so much quarter half, which ended up putting our number seven, Kaiser White, on Cooper Kupp, not only on one occasion, but on a few more occasions. So the game plan was just, I was like, what do you do in
Right.
that scenario?
Definitely. That seems like that was one of the factors that we talked about that week, was you have to find the best way to try to bracket Cooper Kupp and take care of Puka and Nacua, because we knew that the Rams rushing game, at least to that point, had not been strong. They're missing Joe Noteboom. Instead, they turn it around and he has 150 plus rushing yards in the second half alone. Joe, what were some of your takeaways that you had, at least for the game?
Obviously, stopping the run was a problem. They as Marco said, they were gashing our defense, and that didn't shock me, because one of the things I've been saying for a while is I think this coaching staff is doing a good job in terms of culture, in terms of scheme, but the Cardinals just don't have the personnel to hang with some of the better teams in the NFL right now. This is what happens year one of of a reboot, and of the roster reset. So that wasn't shocking. I think there was just a point where they did their best effort, but they just didn't have the players to make the plays, especially in that front seven. But more than anything, just the quarterback play was really substandard. Dobbs is a backup, and he has played well for stretches. And when your quarterback has to a backup quarterback has to play six games for you, you're going to get games like this. So I not down on him as what he is, a backup quarterback. I think he's a good backup quarterback, but you just watched it. There were so many throws. I mean, there, obviously the interception, but there were other throws that were near interceptions, other throws where I just watched it and said, Kyler would have made that throw, and there's just so many things that you look at that, okay, when this team has some better personnel, the fact that they're competitive in the first place tells you that the process is right. They just need the personnel to catch up with that. So to me, it was kind of a depressing game to watch in terms of just how it played out. They were in it and then they weren't. And that is the MO this year. But from a bigger picture, right, from a 10,000 foot view, it was everything's kind of as expected, right? They're going to be competitive at stretches, but there's going to be a point where they just don't have the horses to run to keep up, and they're going to fall behind to the teams that have better personnel. That's what we saw. And that's what we're going to probably keep seeing at least till Kyler gets back. We might be a little, you know, more apt to keep up if he takes, you know, to the system well, and certainly till, you know, next year when they have a little bit more personnel established.
Walter, your thoughts at least on the game for what we were seeing from the Cardinals on Sunday.
Yeah, I expect a lot more from a defensive minded head coach. I think it's a really faulty, leaky defense scheme wise. I was really giving him credit in the first half for making some corrections from the week before where they, you know, basically, you know, couldn't stop Joe Burrow and their passing attack. And they came out man and they bracketed Cup on a few occasions, which was really good. And, you know, they got the Rams off the field. And so, you know, here's what happened in my mind. And how the Cardinals failed at halftime was that the biggest play in the game was the Cooper Kupp 49-yard on first down bomb that the Rams, if they obviously watched the tape, saw the Cardinals give up first down bombs to like three of their previous opponents in the Giants game, the kid from Tennessee, Haylen Hyatt. That was a backbreaker. Then you saw Ayuk. That was a backbreaker. Then you saw Chase. All first down plays without any free safety help. The lack of a back end free safety is really troubling to me. And the fact that they don't scheme it and plan it is very troubling to me. Especially when you give away Isaiah Simmons for virtually nothing. And all you have to do is pay him $1 million on this season. I thought they pulled the ripcord on him way too fast because we had no one else. It reminded me of Dennis Green coming into the Cardinals and firing Pete Kendall, who was our best offensive lineman because he didn't like him because he was a union rep. And we had no one behind him, and our offensive line sucked the whole year. You can't do that. You can't weaken the whole football team by getting rid of your best athletes. You know, so here's what happened. It's pretty simple. So McVay didn't run the ball much in the first half, but when he got that bomb, he knew at halftime Gannon and Raelis would be twisted over that play and be trying to teach the team how to counter for that. Because you know how Gannon keeps talking about explosives and how you can't have explosives. And so McVay went in and said, they're playing man. We're going to pound it on them, and we're going to pound them 10 times in a row. And Gannon and Raelis didn't see it coming. Unfortunately, they thought it'd be more of the same in the second half. They didn't have a plan to counter. That's what's bothering me. In these second half avalanches that we've now seen in like four games where they don't stop anything, you know, one play can snowball the whole thing like that Cooper Kupp bomb. Because once they get the bomb thrown on them, it's like they all go into the tank mentally. And they go start playing on their heels. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing is, if you're getting pounded on the run, you can stick in an extra defensive lineman, or you can run blitz. And I didn't see much of that either. So you're not countering. You're not doing anything. You're just letting them pound the ball down your throat. And now the Rams have total momentum in the game, and it made it harder for us to cover. And that's, you know, ideally, if you're against a team that's running the ball, you want to play zone so you can really come up and force the run. But McVay, I think, outfoxed the whole coaching staff. And, you know, the other thing that really bothers me is I watch a guy in McVay working his ass off on the sideline, and I look over at Gannon doing jack shit, nothing. I just, the disparity of watching those two efforts in that game stuck in my craw. And I just don't know what to make of that. I don't see a guy adjusting. I don't see a guy getting emotional. I don't see a guy really coaching on the sidelines. And I think that does not bode well for the future of Jonathan Gannon in Arizona.
It's going to be really interesting as far as with how that goes with Gannon. And some of that I think that I'm going to be very curious about is the Cardinals haven't really trailed much at all in the first halves of games. So in that regard, as far as like we have to go out and adjust, we have to make this here. It's almost that second half, I think, of having to be able to accept the counterpunch that from what we've said is, yeah, I agree with you. It'd be nice if they could be able to play a bit more zone. We know that Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, they have gone off against zone defenses in the past, and that's been something that I would agree that Marcos and I, we even discussed and said, hey, if you're going to run a zone defense, you're probably going to get carved up. So we said, be aggressive, make sure you play man on them, keeping a safety back. One of the biggest things I think that we underestimated in this game, though, was the state of where the defensive line and the linebackers were against this specific scheme. One of the things that I think we can at least take away from was some of the, and this is just kind of pulling this up to see the PFF grades, but it did fit some of what I felt like was a big narrative for the game, which is if you're looking in the run defense, you can see some of the secondary players, but Jonathan Ledbetter got moved a lot out of the run game. When I rewatched the tape, it was just times where he was doing a good job of tackling. He was doing a good job if he had to be, you know, was adequate with rushing the passer. He didn't get any sacks or pressures, at least that I counted, but he was getting moved out of the lane many times. There were sometimes even double teaming him to move him out of the lines, which there's a play run called duo that will do that a lot by having two guys on one. And when it came to then, it means it's up to your nose tackle or your defensive tackle, your defensive end, to then, if he's kind of getting moved out of the way, you're going to have to make sure that you're filling stuff properly. They didn't step up as well. They missed multiple tackles between Lucky Fotu, Roy Lopez, who was in there. And I think the other thing that stood out was Kaiser White probably had his worst game as an Arizona Cardinal. He was the second lowest ranked player overall and was poor in all three phases of the game, except for when he did get, I think, at least one or two snaps that he did blitz. But that really was the story of the game to me, was that it felt like that the cornerbacks were at least given a game script that was able to, for the most part, bottle up Cooper and Puka. Because pregame, there was even an online, I think it was a prop bet that said, hey, if Cooper, Kupp, and Puka Nacua go over 185 yards combined, you'll get some money. And we're like, oh, that's easy. You should go ahead and smash that. And the Cardinals actually held them to under that by 13 yards, which if you told anyone previously that week after watching Ja'Marr Chase, they'd have been shocked. But I think that, like you said, it felt like that they were able to punch the Rams, and then the Rams saw, oh, okay, whenever you kind of can get him in with the right hook, he'll kind of just step back to avoid that right hook. And they knew then, oh, he's stepping back every single time. Those defensive linemen up front are there. Kaiser's not having a great game. He's kind of maybe getting too sucked up field. Now I having to play back in coverage on, let's call it like it is sometimes. The Rams love getting Cooper Kupp matched up on linebackers, and they'll do tricky things to try to have it get done. You have to be able to find the best solution to either make him pay for that, or you're going to end up being looking at a kind of a cut, death by a thousand cuts, which is exactly what I think we saw from the Kyren Williams run game. He had a few big runs up the middle, and it was always guys in the secondary behind that first line of defense that always seemed to be the ones who had to bring him down. And that was just getting manhandled at the line of scrimmage by especially Steve Avila, the rookie guard, who had a tremendous game as far as his run blocking ability I'm concerned. So that was some of what I saw for the most part. And it's kind of that, yes, they need to do better. And then also it's accepting some of the team where they are, unfortunately. I think Marcos and I have talked about that. We didn't pick the Cardinals to win this game because we figured that the Rams were just at a better place. But at the same time, you do want to make sure that you're being able to attack and be able to not just maintain a lead, but be able to at least ensure that you're not just going to get run up the middle. And that's the whole reason why you lost the game on Sunday. Were there any other thoughts you had at least on that, Walter?
Yeah, good summary. And thank you for the showing the PFF grades. That was awesome. You know, White's worst game actually was against the 49ers. He had the lowest, he was lowest 20s on the team in that game. He's just not a Mike linebacker. He's a converted safety. He's perfect for the weak linebacker, where he played really well for the Eagles. The decision to move him to Mike, I think, was made because he knows the Gannon Rallis off defense, but it weakened essentially two positions. Because, I mean, yesterday we want a, you know, a snot knocker at Mike, and we have one in Collins. And Collins's impact on that game yesterday was one tackle, which was an awesome across the field tackle on you know, Kyron Williams from the backside. He made the play all the way over. Imagine him doing that, you know, side to side and from the mic. He's still a developing player. I didn't trust anything that Vance Joseph ever did with linebackers. Mm-hmm. I was hoping we would get an immediate upgrade with Rallis as a linebackers coach. So the obvious answer to me is we're not getting much out of Josh Woods either. I'm surprised at that grade because he got two tackles early like he did in the game before, and then he kind of disappeared. In fact, he only had five tackles in a game where you're getting the ball run down your throats. As an inside linebacker, that's not a good stat, and I'm sorry. But he's never been that good of a linebacker in the NFL. I just don't know what they see in him. He's an aggressive guy, and he's a good special teamer, and I think he's halfway decent in coverage. But I don't think he's a starting caliber linebacker. And it's just such a waste to see Zaven Collins getting actually platooned on the edge, where Victor Dimakije now is playing even better, I think. So you don't really need him there. So why not shift him in? What do you guys think of that?
Let me take the point on that. So I've been making that same case about Zaven Collins moving back to the inside linebacker position, mostly because he's kind of taking away snaps from like other linebackers that can have that position full time. And I do believe that, like, if you're going to have a linebacker in this type of system, he better be able to like cover and go sideline to sideline. And we're not. So yesterday with that check on Cooper Kupp, that was a missed check by Kaiser White to be able to check himself out of that play. So instead of checking himself out to a different type of coverage to get a safety on Cooper Kupp, he just went ahead and continued on with that play call. And of course he got burned on that big play, but there was another instance where it happened again, where he was down with Cooper Kupp. Cause if you have a 3-by-1 formation, Cooper Kupp is going to line up the closest to the line of scrimmage because they want him matched up on a linebacker. So I do believe that, like, in that circumstance, maybe, I know it's hard to believe with Zaven, but Zaven has some shiftiness to him as a big 6'4" linebacker. Maybe Zaven does a better job in that situation, but Zaven would have to get the grasp of checking himself out of that play to put himself in a better position. So I want to make it a vote for, like, moving Zaven back to inside linebacker.
That's your take. It's your hot take, at least there. Nice. I think. Well, Joe, what do you think, at least as far as with the move with linebacker? And because this has been a hot topic for Cardinals fans ever since Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Collins were drafted. The original show that we had, the insider said that most teams saw Zaven Collins as an edge, and Arizona saw him as an inside linebacker. And I think that was me and Johnny Venerable were like, we think he would be, at least, and this is under Vance Joseph, obviously, we felt like it was more of the inside linebacker spot, trying to find a mic. What are your thoughts, at least, about where we are now with Zaven Collins?
Yeah, that's tough because my default is to recognize that coaching staffs know more than I do about football, and they know what they look for at different positions within their system. So there's a reason they moved him there. Probably has to do with his physical profile and size and things, and what probably not quite what they want at the inside linebackers and more what they want on the edge. They do, you know, do a lot of different fronts. So I think they move him around a little bit. So I want to give that caveat that there's a reason, and it probably has something to do with what they know about their scheme. But it was one of those things that just felt weird to me. I mean, Collins is, you know, he in some ways he feels like a prototypical Mike linebacker, except he actually is a little bit better in pass coverage than a typical Mike linebacker. He's not the thumper who's a liability in pass coverage. He's actually pretty good. So, you know, I loved him as a Mike. I suspect there's something that they maybe just want guys that are a little bit smaller and maybe even a little bit faster at their inside linebackers. That might be part of what it is. He does have the physical size for an edge rusher, but that's not what he was in college. You know, I mean, you know, inside linebackers rush the passer on blitzes, and he has experience doing that, but he doesn't have those pass rush moves like someone who's been an edge rusher forever. And you know, one of the things we've been highlighting on my live streams looking at the PFF grades is even on a game like this where he has a good PFF grade, the pass rush grade is almost pretty much every week been low for him, which to me is a sign that he doesn't have those moves, right? And can he develop them? Sure. Do you want to be doing that in what, year three, year four of his pro career? You know, and sadly, this what it probably tells me is he's not probably going to be back after his rookie deal. I think, yeah, they're playing him an edge, trying to get something out of him there. But they've drafted, you know, an edge rusher in BJ Ojulari. They've got a couple other guys that will, you know, that they drafted last year, Thomas and Sanders. I just don't know that they're going to, you know, commit the kind of money to a second contract for a guy who's learning the position. I think unless they move him back to inside linebacker, I think when his rookie deal runs out, he's going to go somewhere else and be a Mike linebacker for another team. It is what's, I think, a more natural position for him.
Yeah, can I just jump in there to add a point? Is that here's what I believe happened. They going in the draft, they knew pre-draft they were going to trade out and not take Will Anderson. So they looked at the measurables and they saw, wow, Zaven Collins, Will Anderson. And if you go look it up and even their combine numbers, it's remarkably different. But as Joe pointed out, very astutely, I mean, you know, Will Anderson's been rushing a passer his whole life. I mean, he's been playing on the edge. I mean, to try to, you know, morph an athlete who's not used to that at the NFL level after 2 years of, you know, of playing inside was a tall task. So they were thinking at the same time they could stick Kaiser, their guy, at the mic because they wanted to give him the green dot. Which makes sense from that standpoint, but you don't take Kaiser off the field, so you could give him the green dot at the week. You don't need the mic to have the green dot. You'd want the guy who's staying on the field. So in my mind, it would have either been Kaiser anywhere you line him because he's not coming off the field, or Buda Baker, you know, one of those two. But it backfired on him because, I mean, now they're, you know, they took the gamble. They thought that they could, you know, develop Collins as a pass rusher. And that it's pretty clear right now. He doesn't have that quick twitch like a Gardeck or Ojulari has. So he's more of a, you know, a power rusher. But he doesn't shed quick. He doesn't swim quick enough either. But one thing he's good at is those tackle end exchange loops where we saw him get the sack 2 weeks ago, looping around Cam Thomas, who's another player they have to get more out of, that they're wasting, in my opinion. They've got to play him more. They got to find a niche for him. And here's the last thing. Is it what they got stuck in between is, do we go 4-3 or do we go stick with what they had with the 3-4? And I think as a result, they've been sort of in no man's land trying to figure out what they, we didn't have a strong enough interior to play 4-3, right, Marco? I mean, we don't have strong enough tackles. So you had to sort of go 34, but that has compromised the whole thing with who you play on the edge. I mean, so yeah, I think, hopefully they will make the switch. And the other thing, Joe, is, you know, if you want one more year of Zaven and don't want to give him the fifth year option, you always have the tag, and tags for inside linebackers are far less expensive than for edges. So just as a thought.
Sure. I do think one of the biggest things, and this is something I know that we talked about too with our show, Marcos, is when it comes to how the Cardinals have wanted to run their defense and their personnel, it's been different, especially with the Buda Baker injury. Because normally if you're talking about you're wanting to line up Cooper Kupp, you normally would say we don't want to have a linebacker be in that spot if you can bring one of Jalen Thompson in the nickel to be able to cover if he's going to be there, or one of, you know, obviously Buda Baker, or being able to bracket him where that way you're at least having someone go in support. One thing that I noticed is after the very first week, one thing the Cardinals did adjust was how they were defending the tight ends. And some of it, I think, is a combination of personnel. But as far as it goes, the best tight end play that they've gotten overall has really not come from Josh Woods. It's come more from Chris Barnes. And they've had injuries to that spot and those positions in addition to the corners. So you're probably talking about like missing four or so of your starters. And one thing that I saw that I think that was really good last week was we got to see Zaven lined up a lot more on the strong side where the tight end was. And we actually, when he did drop into coverage on a Tyler Higbee, it wasn't that Higbee was roasting the Cardinals. It was these difficult throws Stafford was trying to have to make to Kupp and to Puka Nacua earlier in the game. And he was just missing on quite a few of those. I think that was the one spot where I at least can understand where you would want to put Zaven there as far as, hey, like in our scheme, we're going to try to be able to rush four, but because Rallis will rush from different places. There's one time where I think they even lined just one single player on the lineup, and that was what caused the timeout. There was no defensive tackle on the field whatsoever. It's just like all linebackers. It's like their pure pass rusher package. In order to make that work, they have to have people who are capable and athletic enough in coverage. And so I've seen some of that vision for where they can at least have Zaven as this guy who he can bull rush the passer, and he's strong enough and, you know, agile enough to keep up with tight ends. But like you're saying, that when it comes to how you affect the game, there's not been elite play that we've seen in that specific spot, at least not as just specifically like that type of a strong side linebacker. It's taken Kaiser away from the weak side linebacker to be the Mike. And so it's kind of this almost downward effect of you're probably having to make some plans and adjustments due to some of the injuries that normally you could just throw Buda or Jalen Thompson into there for how good of a player they are. And I'm very curious if they move him back to Mike, is that going to destroy some of the progress he's made on kind of learning this new place, a new position? And I think that's the ultimate question. Is it a short-term or a long-term? Because short-term fix, you may actually get to win a game if you can shift him to the Mike, be able to put Kaiser at the will. Long term, is that something where he's going to then end up being a guy who is going to end up getting hurt more and more over time with that, from not playing a Mike position for an entire season or playing an edge for an entire season? That's a really tough conversation to have, but I think that when you're looking at some of the coverage grades, I'd rather have Zaven drop back in coverage than Cameron Thomas, because that's just how some teams have been able to draw up some plays where Cam Thomas was like, nope, I got to drop back in coverage at least. And it's like, I never want to see, you know, those types of plays at least again, versus seeing the likes of Zaven. But they are really right now having to rely on their Mike for so much without having a really strong defensive tackle group up front. And if they do move Zaven back, I think that'd be almost a sink or swim type of situation, where either he's going to then step up and you'll start seeing Kaiser make maybe some more affecting plays versus just filling or blitzing. But on the other hand, then it's, you know, either you're going to sink or you'd swim with Zaven moving back to that spot. And I'm very curious to see what happens the rest of the year, especially when they get those cornerback, or I should say safeties, both of them back on the roster.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing to add about like Zaven moving back to the, if they want to go ahead and do that, is like, because of the season and the way it's going anyway, like if you want to try these people in different positions. But to Joe's point about like his moves, he hasn't developed the pass rush moves like any club techniques, anything going from speed to power to speed. Like he hasn't, because mostly of the great outside linebackers or defensive ends, they have ways to set up tackles to counter what they're going to do and to basically read what they're doing, because tackles will pick up on their tendencies and they'll start lining up differently. They'll start moving like their leg a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage or away from it. They'll start bouncing back like further out to be able to stop the speed moves. And with Zaven, he's going to take probably like another, probably 1,000 to 2,000 snaps to be able to like get the hang and develop those moves and read the tackles like and what they're doing. So moving him back to what I consider his natural position, they put him back there and he has better field of view to be able to read defense, offenses, as opposed to just being on one side of the line of scrimmage and then just reading the cues from that specific area.
Bravo, lad.
I think that's great insight there. I do at least like there's a comment that we've got with our YouTube channel, at least from Red Sea, says, as an outside linebacker in a 3-4 makes sense if you want one of your edge rushers to drop into coverage and not be a liability. But then here, like you were saying, Walter, he doesn't have the rush moves as a true edge. And so then you're trying to find what's the best way to use this player. And I think if he is a guy that, like we're, I think, talking about, he wouldn't have his fifth-year option picked up because there's not enough pass rush as far as a move. Then I think the question is, can you find someone in the draft who maybe fills that role in a later round? Or are you talking about, we need to make sure we use this guy because there's very few athletes that are at his size and skill level? So I think those are all some great topics that we can have, at least. Speaking of debate, let's go and kind of shift topics here, segue into, we kind of called the great debate. We're going to talk about some all-time Cardinals greats and be able to kind of go over some of these questions. So we've got a great team of experts here to go over, and I wanted to see if we could start with one of these questions. And so Marcos and I will probably be maybe on one side, Joe, Walter, you guys can either be on the other if you want to have that debate style. If you're like, hey, I'm on this side and I kind of disagree, then let's go ahead and hear it.
Well, guys rule, baby. Here we go.
All right, so the first question that we have here is going to be talking about the Arizona Cardinals safeties. If you're going to be talking about the safeties, who is the greatest safety in Cardinals history? Is it Larry Wilson or is it Adrian Wilson? Who is the greatest safety in Cardinals history?
Walter has a prop.
Walter's coming back. He's coming back.
And the winner is?
Larry Wilson, huh?
Larry Wilson. Got that
Larry Wilson card. So what makes, go for it. What makes Larry Wilson your safety one for the Cardinals?
Well, he was really the pioneer who made the free safety blitz popular to begin with. He was an acrobatic safety who played all over the field. That's just who we need right now. He'd get to deep balls. He intercepted passes with two hands and casts. I mean, he was just everything you'd ever want in a safety. He stormed the alleys and made hits like Buddha. We're talking free safety. I think he was the best. Is there anyone else to think of at free? I don't know.
I have a hard time thinking of anyone else at free. I think Adrian, I know, was a strong safety, more likely than a free safety.
I'm trying to remember if he played free, but I think we have to at least include in the conversation the late Kwame Lassiter. He's certainly someone worth discussing, certainly as a ball hawk. It's interesting, I don't have the benefit of having seen Larry Wilson play, so it's a little hard to judge that. Obviously, I love Adrian Wilson. I think, there's this tough conversation about eras. Do players from the early eras, when we look at how refined, conditioning and everything has gotten, there's a tough question of how many players from earlier eras could even play in the NFL today, and that's a whole other conversation. But in terms of their impact for their time, I certainly couldn't argue against Larry Wilson without the experience of having seen him play.
Right. Yeah, it's strong. For anyone cares about my Mount Rushmore for Cardinal D-backs, right cornerback Roger Worley. God, I loved him. He was awesome. Free safety Larry Wilson, strong safety. Buddha's gaining on me. I mean, I love Adrian. If I had to choose between the two of them, I've always had Adrian, but now I'm more wondering whether Buddha gets in there, because I think Buddha is more versatile than Adrian was, but Adrian was more physical. I mean, when he hit you, boy, you knew it. But I love it. I love those both. And then, of course, Aeneas Williams at left cornerback was the greatest cornerback I've ever seen in Cardinal Red. He was fantastic. So, but yeah, I would say, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Who would you pick, Adrian or Buddha at strong?
I'm just like you with Buddha gaining, because their profiles are so different. We remember that Adrian Wilson was he was almost as big as a linebacker, and he probably would play linebacker in today's NFL. He was 6'3", 225 pounds, and he was an athletic freak for his size and whatnot. And he put up so many great years of just Pro Bowl worthy years where we knew he was the constant. And now Buddha is that constant now, being at a smaller size, but still being as hard of a hitter. He's pound for pound, he has a lot of heart too. Both of them did. That's the funny thing, is that both him and Adrian Wilson had heart toughness. They could bring up a team. They can try to intimidate the other team in their different ways. Everybody needs to know where number 3 is. Well, everybody needed to know where number 24 was too. So it's a very good question. To point out about Larry Wilson, I was watching a video about the best players from each state, which fun fact, I didn't know Cam Jordan played for Hamilton High School here in
Tempe. Yes, he did.
That was crazy. And so Larry Wilson was announced, he was given the best player title from Idaho. And I was like, that's interesting. So I wish I'd watched more film or more videos back then of Larry Wilson, because from what I hear from you, Walter, is this guy was an all-around just great, talented player. And he made you love the Cardinals, right?
Yes.
So he made you into a fan when you went to go see them where, in New York, right?
Yeah, Yankee Stadium. Yep.
Okay.
November 24th, 1963.
Yeah, I read your article. It was awesome. Like, I was like, oh wow. So I'll give you, just for you, pal, the number 8, which is retired. I will say he is the better safety. I keep forgetting. I wanted to call him Antrel Roll. I do love Adrian Wilson, and he was great too. Because I grew how you grew up watching Larry, I grew up watching Adrian, and he's one of the reasons as to why I love the defensive part of the game.
I would just also like to add that for me, when Buddha finishes his career, as long as he continues to be the kind of player we think he's going to be, he would be number one ahead, or at least certainly ahead of Wilson for me. And I love Adrian Wilson. For me, Wilson, the only reason Wilson is still ahead of him right now is really the longevity that he's got, a full career body of work to that he's done it. If Buddha keeps doing what he's doing, though, it's going to be Buddha ahead of Wilson for me.
Yeah,
I do think that Adrian, if you're talking about a freak athlete with his size at the 6'3", 230, he's essentially a linebacker. And he not only had multiple sacks, but also interceptions, at least from the safety position, which normally you do want to be able to have a player. To have someone who can do both is pretty insane. I will say this, though, at least for Larry Wilson, the athleticism that he had, and when we've seen guys who are smaller in the NFL be able to make it when playing with this physicality, people don't realize he had 50 interceptions or so plus. He had 52 interceptions in his career. And when you're talking about him being one of the guys who's part of the safety blitz, we forget they did not keep track of stats as a measure back then. So if you say Adrian Wilson's in the 25-25 club, or no, I should say Adrian's in that one, Larry's probably closer to the 50-50 club than Adrian Wilson was, and was a guy who did it for in an era where teams were running the ball a lot more. He was getting a lot of those interceptions. So I think that athleticism, if you wanted to say, oh, could he play in today's NFL at, you know, he's, I think it was 6', 190 pounds, about close to where Buddha is. I think the answer to that would be yes. And that's something that I don't think athleticism maybe changes as much as we think it does, as far as for over the years. There's obviously going to be more freak athletes with the new types of training. But in terms of for how that translates, I think I would probably say maybe in a current day, looking at the safeties we have, you might take an Adrian for size. But when it comes to in general, as far as I do think Larry is an awesome option.
Blake. Yeah. If it was today and Steve Keimer here, Adrian Wilson wouldn't play safety. He'd play the weekend side linebacker.
You might be right about that. We never saw Adrian Wilson on a Steve Keimer field. It was 2013. Steve took over, and he was released from the team because he was at the end of his career, unfortunately.
Yeah. He would probably be a better linebacker than what we have out right now, except for Kaiser. Maybe he would. Better than Kaiser.
He'd get downhill to the ball in a hurry, and that's what we need. We need downhill slobber knockers to take the romance out of the running game. And we have converted safeties, small, can't get off blocks. That's the problem. But my favorite Adrian Wilson moment, maybe my favorite Cardinal moment ever, was when the red rain of confetti was falling at then U of P Stadium. When we won the Halas Trophy, I have to pinch myself even saying that. Like, we won the Halas Trophy, beating the Eagles that day. In what an amazing game! And Adrian Wilson was in an interview and he was crying his eyes out. And I just thought, and here was a guy too. You might remember this, Joe. Wilson had offers to leave Arizona, and he was highly coveted in free agency. And like Larry, he said, no, I'm staying. And everyone said, you're crazy. The Cardinals will never make a Super Bowl. And there he was going to the Super Bowl with Larry and heading to, the big show. I was crying with him. I needed a tissue. It was tears of joy deluxe. And, he was always Cardinal red, and, his loyalty was, non-pari, so love the guy.
That's great. All right, let's go and check out with another question here. This one is going to be a interesting one. We're going to look and debate Kurt Warner or Carson Palmer. They're two similar quarterbacks, but you have to pick one. Let's start with you, Joe. Kurt Warner, Carson Palmer. If you had to only pick one, you can't just say both. Who would be your guy?
It would be Kurt Warner, because I'm looking at the quarterback as who has the best chance to lead the team to a championship. And he certainly got the closest and is the one of those two quarterbacks who has Super Bowl rings. Carson Palmer was really a great quarterback for the Cardinals. Certainly one of the better that I've ever seen in terms of how he played. They could have gotten further if he didn't get injured. I think, that was certainly a possibility. But I just, even though Kurt Warner's time was maybe a little more brief, I think how significant it was to take the Cardinals to Super Bowl, even though it ended in a way, I still have nightmares about that, that interception that was returned very, very, very far. But for a quarterback who took us to the Super Bowl, I just, you got to go with that guy.
Walter, your thoughts at least.
Warner, I mean, God. The way he synced up those receivers, the way he ran the offense himself, the way he took command of that team, the way he spent extra hours. I mean, he made a household name out of Jeremy Urban as wide receiver 4, as suddenly his go-to third down specialist, because he knew he was up against a CB4 on the other team, and he'll take that mismatch any day. He told all the receivers to shut up. Don't talk to me. I'll get you the ball when you're open. But we're going to distribute the ball. He took such command. He had tremendous accuracy. And to this day, his playoff win over the Packers, who had kicked our ass the week before in the home finale. That was one of the most epic quarterback duels I have ever seen. And it's the greatest singular a quarterback performance I have seen in Cardinals history. I mean, Warner had to be perfect that day because the Packers were scoring every time. And he was that kind of quarterback who could take that on his shoulders, which is so tough for anybody to know. If I screw up one drive here, we're going to lose. But he was so touchdown hungry. I've never seen a quarterback so touchdown hungry as Kurt Warner. I mean, and every time he touched the ball, it wasn't like, oh, I'll take a series off. he was always just so sharp. And his timing on throws, he would put it on you where you wanted it. He threw over the middle, the best of any Cardinals quarterback I've ever seen. He engaged more receiver. He made a 1,000-yard receiver out of Stevie Breston,
yep,
Michigan, who couldn't even catch the ball when he arrived as a rookie. He could catch it on punts, but not passes. I mean, the work ethic, the commitment, he had the total package. Now, Carson Palmer, I have huge respect for. What Palmer had that Warner never did was a pretty decent defense.
Mm-hmm.
So he could take a little more risks. And I thought at times, what I loved about Carson Palmer was, if he screwed up, you don't want to play him in the next drive. He was always, you know, like, race that. I'm coming, you know, fighting back with a vengeance. But, man, I mean, playing in that offense too, BA's offense, was a quarterback crusher. I mean, you know, he got beat up big time, and he stood in there and took the licking. And, you know, he had the ACL. He had his season ended on a broken arm in London.
Yep.
I mean, oh, there he is. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I will say this at least. I don't think it's as close either, because to me, you're talking about the context of the players. The Cardinals' defense was essentially giving up about 18 points a game during Bruce, and we got to see a lot of toughness out of Carson Palmer. There was so much toughness of similar things where Kurt would get the ball out while taking a huge hit because the team was having to kind of build that offensive line in there. And there was not a good run game that they had for outside of, I think, the Tim Hightower near the end of his spot. And then the Beanie Wells when he came in as a rookie, that was partially drafted so high because they struggled so much with the run, with being able to run the ball, that it was on Kurt to have to do it. And the team still could barely get to a double digit wins because he was ended up being the guy. And like you said, he put that all on his shoulders. So I think in that context, I would probably pick Kurt over Carson Palmer. And not to say it's a disrespect, but like you said, you look at what each had to work with, and Kurt had so much less and was able to deliver for the Cardinals so much more.
Right.
I'm going to go ahead and play devil's advocate here, because I love you, Kurt Warner. And I've, like, you know, I love, like, how you do your YouTube video show about QB breakdowns, breaking down everything from the QB's eyes to be able to assess everything the way he does. And I love that about him. And he will always be like the whatever he is in that Twitter handle. I think he's like Obi-Wan Kenobi. So he will always be that person for us and the Cardinals. And I love how he still has a 13 Cardinals jersey. He's always going to be a Cardinal. And plus, just a little bit of an anecdote. My friend was part of his church group, and he played with him at they took him to GameWorks over there by Arizona Mills Mall, and he came over telling my friend, "Hey, I heard you're beating like, it was a game called Tekken, you're beating up on little kids." And then he asked them, "Do you want to go?" And they played Tekken, and he always like says, "Oh yeah, I beat Kurt Warner at Tekken." So I'll give him his little shout out to you, Hao Lee, if you're watching, if you know. Yes, I put it out there. And if Kurt Warner ever watches this, then now he knows that I know too. But as far as like which better QB, I've gained so much respect for Carson Palmer. I will admit, I was not a Carson Palmer fan when we made the trade for him. I thought that was like a big reach for a quarterback that's probably at the end parts of his career and whatnot. And so after year one, you know, he had the 24-22 TD to interception ratio. I was like, well, I did see him have some toughness. Then the year two came around and he got hurt. But when he did play, we won. Then 2015, I saw everything from Carson Palmer that I wanted to see. I saw the toughness, I saw the command, and I saw the accountability. There was times where he shouldn't have taken accountability, but he did, because he wanted his unit to know, hey, I'm going to play every inch of this, with every inch of my body, I'm going to play with my hardest, and I will try. I'll train as hard as I can. That coming back from the ACL injury to have the type of season that he had, I was I loved the work ethic and the personality that Carson Palmer really won me over. And to give one point to Walter Mitchell, he did have to hang on to the ball more than in any other type of offense because it was reading furthest to closest. So he had to hang in there longer, and he did take a lot of hits, a lot of sacks, and that line was not tip top when it came to pass protection. So he was tough, and I commend him for that.
Best deep ball quarterback I've seen from the Cardinals ever.
Yeah.
He and Neil Lomax. Jim Hart, too, was really good throwing deep, but couldn't drive the ball like Carson Palmer. Palmer had a howitzer.
No, he had a better, I would say, deep ball even than Kurt, as far as like Marco said, the offense was asking him to drive the ball deeper. And what I think we see with Kurt Warner's history, when he had two elite receivers that he knew he could trust, he was able to throw the ball up to them, and that was where the deep ball came in, because he's like, all right, Fitzpolden, they're down there somewhere. Palmer had to actually be more precise because of how the offense was structured. And it's a different type of game, I think, at least that the Cardinals were playing than pretty much any other team for the most part, where they would run it, power up the middle, and then they would go and bomb deep over the top. That's something I think at the end of the day, Cardinals fans, we were winners to be able to get to see both of them play ultimately. But it is really fun to look at some of those changes. Speaking of which, let's do another thing with the quarterbacks. Jake Plummer versus Kyler Murray. Jake Plummer was known as a scrambling quarterback. I think the closest thing we've seen where he was would be he was kind of the first wave of these Tony Romo type of quarterbacks who would do a lot of, maybe not make their living as a scrambler, but had all of this athleticism that you would see them on bootlegs and other plays. Whereas Kyler's just been a different freak of nature. He's like you're putting a little Ferrari out there just because of how he does with running, in much more of the like 2020s type of NFL that we see with quarterbacks. What would you guys say as far as with Jake Plummer versus Kyler Murray, if you're having to pick one of those quarterbacks? And it doesn't have to be in modern era, but what would be the options that you would say between those two?
Who should I'll go first?
I was going to say Marcos can go first, but let's have Joe go and then Marcos, then Walter. So we'll mix it up a little bit.
Okay. As a player, it's going to be Kyler. I think if you've watched my content, you know, I'm a big Kyler believer. I think his arm talent is underrated because people look at so much what he does with his legs, but the way he gets that ball out deep, the way he flings that ball, the baseball kind of background helps him with that. So I think Kyler is just a better player in terms of talent. I will say though, Jake Plummer to me is just this really, it's this story that if you experienced it, there's just a certain sort of ethos to it. There's this, you know, he was playing at Arizona State University, obviously went to the Rose Bowl. There was already a buzz about him, right, around the Valley. And then the Cardinals draft him. And the Cardinals, a franchise that hadn't had good quarterback play since they'd come to Arizona, really, other than Neil Lomax, you know, in the last year or two of his career. And we'd been longing for a quarterback. And then there's this guy who is already sort of a local legend in the Valley, gets drafted by the hometown team and takes him to the playoffs. Right. And beats the Cowboys in the playoffs. And one of my great memories is that when they won that playoff game, they had the plane kind of taxi up to the edge of the airport, and they had a stand, a kind of a platform out there, invited fans to come out. And I was out there when they landed, and they got up on the platform and talked about the game, the coach and everyone. And it was a great experience. So there is this certain something, at least in the history as a fan, that Jake Plummer has that I'll never forget. But as a player, I'm still taking Kyler.
I will take the great Derek Anderson. I know he's not part of this debate, but I have to put him out there. The type of poise that he had in the pocket and what he had to deal with. And that, I mean, you got to give it to him because of that podium meltdown that he had. Nobody just understood him. He was just trying to laugh with his teammate. Right. I don't know why people have such a big deal. I'm just joking. Yeah, no, Derek Anderson can go do whatever he's doing right now.
Tongan barbecue. That was what it was always about with Deuce Latuhi, at least for the most part. So, and I do know that Deuce did actually move to an Arena Football League and tried out with them for a time, but by that point he was nearing 400 pounds and it just was not going to necessarily work despite his experience. So it just shows you that there's a time in the NFL that you'll have, and then there's a time that you're not going to be able to have. And that was something, I think, with Jake Plummer that we did see for health and some of the other reasons that his career ended early, whereas Kyler's is still an ongoing type of story.
Anyway, apparently, continue, Marcos. Jake Plummer's really high on shrooms or something like that. Like he's
played a lot of handball, too. A lot of handball. Right.
He's gone in a pretty weird trajectory, but I don't have any real memories with Jake Plummer. Unfortunately, I wasn't watching football at that time frame. But you know, I would always hear Jake the Snake Plummer, and I mean, he did have that ability to scramble, find the open guy, or just run. It really surprised me just how much of a scrambling quarterback he was. Back when the era was about more like pocket passing, stay in the pocket, find the deep guy off the play action type of situation. But yeah, I would have to take Kyler's ability as to hire, because Kyler has a higher potential and he has a higher like ceiling than what Carson Palmer had. And I'm not sure if this is just by design or what's going on with Kyler Murray, but what we're seeing right now is a lot of these get out of the pocket type of plays. We can definitely see more of that from Kyler Murray when it comes to scrambling and finding the open guy. He's done it a lot of times, but he's mostly just try to run to get the first down. And these are the type of plays that he can do off of any foot, either like off his back foot, like just off balance and whatnot. So hopefully like we will see more of these deep down highlights. I think the one that stands out to me is the one that he threw to Rondell Moore against the Vikings, where he went to his left and then he was going out of bounds and just launched that ball. It's like, wow, that's beautiful. I mean, like that's a beautiful strike to him on a wide open Rondell Moore who took it to the house. So yeah, I would have to go with Kyler on this one.
Same. Kyler's the most gifted, talented quarterback we've ever drafted. And that includes Joe Namath, who was quite an athlete back when we drafted him. And unfortunately, the Jets from the AFL intercepting him. That was one of the most cruel twists of fate in Cardinals fandom. But Kyler has elite arm and legs, feet on both levels. I mean, Jake the Snake got a lot out of his kind of, you know, his grit, and he couldn't drive the ball too great. But he was a gamer, and he did have that lore, like you were saying, you know, Blake and Joe. I mean, the lore of Jake the Snake and the hometown kid and him being with Pat Tillman, you know, that was a group. Fun era of Cardinals football, and Joe was right. That Cowboy win in the playoffs was just stunning. It was just one of the great, great moments of Cardinal football history, and no one expected it. And Jake Plummer had a great game. Defense really stepped up in that game, and you know, also Larry Centers being around in that era. I mean, he was something else. It just was really a fun era of Cardinals football back when, you know, still playing in 100-degree weather at Sun Devil Stadium.
For sure. Now, I will say, I do think that I think that what I want to see from Kyler is in this new defense being able to having the ability to read through the defenses and coverages, because what we've seen ultimately in a lot of ways is that in his air raid offense, there's been a lot of quick passing decisions, like even the touchdown to Hopkins. You're able to see that you've got the matchup and the safety is there. Right. Jake was a guy who I always, people would say, he just did not have the same sort of field vision as other people did, but he'd be able to make up with it for it with his athleticism. And I think that Kyler being in the air raid offense is actually very similar. Not to say that like you don't read defenses, but more of that the way that the defense was designed was in trying to find a lot of those types of matchups. And by moving now to this new type of drop back system where you're going to be under center more, that's something that I think you'll want to see Kyler be able to develop in that area of being able to turn your back, turn back around, know what the defense has done. Like one of these examples here, you can see that that one's a pretty quick read that he has to make, but that's something we've seen a lot of, I think, have been those quick reads. It's a lot harder when you're holding on to the ball longer, like with Carson Palmer and even Kurt Warner back in his day, having to dissect and break down those defenses versus setting what the defense is going to have to do based on your formations and your passing attack. I will say that this leads to another interesting question as part of the great debate, which is Kyler Murray under center. Is that going to help Kyler Murray? Is that going to not be beneficial for Kyler Murray? That's the next thing I think we can talk about here on our great debate. And I'll start with, let's go back with you, Walter, before we go to Joe.
I'll be interested to see it. I don't think it's been a comfort thing for Kyler. I don't think we'll see the tush push with Kyler, just an FYI. I wouldn't do it with him either. I put another guy in the game if you're going to do it. I wouldn't subject him to that kind of scrum unnecessarily. And I think Kyler would try like hell to convert it. But still, I mean, you don't want to risk him getting injured, and that would just be all-time Cardinals, him getting injured in a pile like that. So the interesting thing for me is that the footwork required is not easy to master. I mean, I, having taught it as a coach and learned a little bit of it when I was a player, there's a lot to it. It seems like such an easy thing to take a snap and you know, drop back or have the right footwork to set up the running backs, you know, in some of those reach plays where you got to get out to hand out the ball and, you know, things like that. It's going to be a challenge. And I thought it was really cool yesterday when I was watching the 49ers game, how the Fox crew put up a quote from Kyle Shanahan. And they asked him what was special about Brock Purdy. And he said that he didn't talk about anything physical. He said that he has elite processing skills of information that he can readily apply to the trade. And I think now that's going to be the test for Kyler, is how he processes this information. Because it's very, the footwork on not only just handoffs, but play action footwork on the waggles, play action footwork on the bootlegs. It requires a real precision that I think Drew Petzing has down as a quarterback coach and with Israel Wolfork. So, but here's the good news. I mean, if I've been saying this since Kyler arrived, getting Kyler out in space and moving the pocket is paramount to his growth as a quarterback. However, which way you do it, I just like simple sprint outs from a shotgun snap even. But getting him out in space where he can see the more of the field and put such pressure on run pass options on defenses, that would be a nightmare to try to defend. So I'm all for it. I hope that he takes to it well and processes it quickly, because he'll have to, I think, if you know, it'll only be like 9 practices in 3 weeks, which is really a short amount of time to learn those steps and at the same time sync up. So it'll be fascinating to see. I think it could take Kyler's game to a whole brand new level if he gets it down.
Yeah, we've seen Kyler, I think, be able to execute a lot of those, but often it was at the goal line where it was just rushing or on fourth down plays. There were some bootlegs we saw at the beginning of 2022, and it felt like those quickly faded away. Joe, what are your thoughts that you have there? And then I think, Marcos, I know you may have to get going at least here in a quick second for the most part, so if you got to go, feel free. But then we'll go with, got one more question after that, at least, with our great debate that we've had today on the podcast.
So I'm going to build off of what Walter said, because I think it's going to be a good thing for Kyler for two reasons, bootlegs and play action passes.
Right.
The bootleg is going to get him out into space. You know, I've talked about this before. What the Browns offense did in Baker Mayfield's best season was they rolled, got him in the bootleg a lot, rolled him out to one side of the field, established the run, and allowed him to see the field. And I think Kyler has a better skill set than Baker Mayfield, and I think they're going to build an offense that Kyler's going to thrive in, getting him out in those bootleg spaces. Because we talk about how one of the big questions with Kyler is, can he see the middle of the field, right, with the tall players in front of him, so on and so forth. And when you get him out in that bootleg, you've changed kind of the landscape in front of him, and he then can see things a lot better. So I think that's going to be a plus for him. And then the play action pass, you know, the Cardinals ran a ridiculously low amount of play action under Cliff Kingsbury. And the research, the data is unequivocal about the efficacy of play action passing. Even if you're not running the ball well, even if you have not done a good job of establishing the run, play action passing still works. It's just that second of pause it gives the defense. So I think for those two reasons, it's going to make the offense go better in general, and it's going to be better for Kyler.
Marcos, what's your thought, Marcos?
Sorry, I was trying to do my little thing where I unmute it with the keyboard, and it completely, like, I had another screen going and stuff. So
I've had that before.
So the thing is, like, it is going to be a huge adjustment, especially when it comes to, like, viewing the field and, like, obviously reading the defense before you turn around and then you try to hand off the ball or sell hand off the ball, and then you turn around again to see what they're going to have afterwards. So one of the biggest adjustments to his game is going to be, let me see if I can go ahead and wonder if I could share screen just with this one play. I have a play for, no, I don't think it's going to let me wait. Hey, hold on.
Sometimes it might. I do think that, like you said, it also is the structure of their offense. It's more of a Shanahan style system where the run game and the guards pulling and getting some of those run game mismatches is helpful, because it means that you don't have to have Kyler be the one who's running on second down to have to get it into third and short. Or when it was Cliff Kingsbury's offense, it would feel like you would often see, all right, it's second and 10. We're going to go with a 9-yard out route. So that way we either are in third and 10 and we can maybe get close enough to go for it on fourth down, or we're going to go and have to do it in a different way. What we've seen, I think, with this Cardinals team is they've been able to work a lot more of the field as far as for being able to be effective on running the ball on second down while also being able to option into more passes on second down. That's something that I think that we've seen, is it feels like that there are answers for that within this Cardinals team that I don't know if Kyler necessarily had to work with. And I'm very excited to see what it would look like. I think the biggest thing to me is going to be, what's the level, not just of athleticism, but like we said, there's going to be obviously times where he's going to have to, in this system, drop back, turn his back under the I formation to the running, to the rest of the defense, then turn back around and be able to know where the play is so that he can make that throw. And sometimes it'll be a tight window throw over the middle between two linebackers to someone like Zach Ertz or a Trey McBride. It's going to be interesting to see how that adjustment is too, because I think Colt McCoy said preseason he'd been used to lining up with his right foot forward for years as far as for how that was. He had to line up with his left foot, and now you can see that's the same thing with Josh Dobbs. Kyler will have to make some of that adjustment to his footwork and his game as well, especially because the whole reason why that left foot is forward is because of the play action fake. If you line up with your right foot forward, kind of being able to take off and move forward, whereas with the play action fake, you're kind of having to be able to turn as far as being able to hand it off one way or the other. And that's an entirely left foot thing. It's hard to go over the intricacies without seeing each of those, but you can kind of take a look at their offense this year and know that left foot has been part of being able to sell the handoff that turns into that bootleg, which is what sells those linebackers on that play action.
Yeah. So are you able to I put it in share screen. I'm just going to go over the footwork of Kyler Murray if we're able to pull that up.
Just let me know when you're ready. I've got your screen right up now, at least. Let me know when you're ready to get that share.
I'm ready. I'll do it directly from the NFL. Right. or NFL Plus side or whatever you want to call it.
Go for it there, because right now I've got your right now I've got on your screen what it seems and is showing is just the four of us. So that would be like some sort of like screens on screens type of thing. So I think it's a different screen you may have to share.
Oh, no, it's not gonna. I don't think it'll do it. Let me see if I can redo it again. If not, then oh well. If not, then I'll just go ahead and just describe about his footwork. So. Mm-hmm. No, I gotta get used to doing this better because I'm over here like fumbling this big time. Sorry, guys. Let's see. Is it working now?
Yep. Now you got it. I got
perfect.
You
in. All right. Cool. So, and I like this because I'm able to see you guys because I tried doing this the first time and I couldn't see anybody or anything. So let me go ahead and full screen this right here. So right here is where I'm talking about when it comes to the footwork. So. The footwork, can you guys see the play, by the way, and everything?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so right here, you got the motion to the tight end going to the other side. So the footwork is going to be the most key importance of getting used to being able to be more under center. So once you see Kyler Murray hike the ball, he turns around to sell the fake, obviously, and he takes a couple more steps backwards. And I know most of the reason why he did that was because the pressure was getting in his face, so he had to like kind of move forward in a sense. But he took way too many steps going backwards on this one, where he kind of needs to like do a three-step drop and then kind of settle in, so that way he's not too far behind the pocket where the pressure initially, you know, pushed him back inward and it killed the play. That's not on him, but that's something that he needs to work on as far as like footwork wise. Where he's turning around, he's already settling in, and then he's looking down the field to see who's the wide open man. And then he had a little bit of a crevice to be able to step into, or a little bit of an opening to step into on that play. Obviously, this play was dead. Reason why is because our offensive linemen are tied in on that side, did not pick up the block on whoever that was. I mean, it was DJ Humphries. And then plus you saw, my God, you didn't see the chip help from the running back, who was James Conner as well. And that's something that, like, they're getting down as far as, like, you know, formations, chip help, and whatnot. But Kyler Murray, like, he's used to just speeding out as if it's a bootleg. But he needs to, like, kind of count his steps and make sure he gets off his back foot and then launches that ball when he sees that wide open guy. Because, you know, at that point, you suck the defenders in and whatnot. So right here, he's a little bit too far off. He'll have to get used to that. He will get used to it. More live snaps will help him settle into that little area of the pocket that which will allow him to get that max protection. And plus let's just have a better blocking from DJ Humphries for once. He's been disappointing this year, and that's going to be key for the tackle on the outside. Paris Johnson, I'll give him credit, he has been doing a really good job being able to like handle his defenders on his side. DJ Humphries and the communication right there was so bad that it actually forced Kyler Murray to have to step back into the pocket where the defender was able to, you know, make him get rid of the ball, because at that point it's like the play's dead.
Yeah, if I could add one thing to that, can we play that again?
Okay.
I mean, here's the problem with his footwork is it gets altered because he turns his head back too. Look at him now.
Yep.
Look at and where his right head
here,
is.
That's he needs wrong. To settle. Yeah, that's way too
you
far.
You can't
off.
Do it that way. It doesn't sell the fake.
Yep. Correct.
You gotta. You know, keep your head to the back of the defense, which ultimately makes him harder to find and defend. But also, you have to be counting off of the fake. You got to go one, two, three, turn. Mm-hmm. That's when you turn. You can't be going one, turn, two, three. Now your whole body's twisted. You know, in that play, it messed it up too quickly. And that's something he's just going to have to rep and get used to because, you know, I understand why he does it. He does not like to have his back to the defense. And his size, I get that. But he's, like, so quick to react to pressure. He's got to just learn to trust it. Like, if there's a guy in his face, he's going to be able to deke it. And, you know, but, I mean... Wow, the potential of what he could do off of those play actions is just enormous. And making it harder to find where he is is just going to be so difficult for defenses.
Sure. Yeah, and I think of also there was a clip earlier from this year that showed Jared Goff where he basically sold a play action fake so well that the free rusher just laid him out and started celebrating. Yes. I think people have seen that play. That is a risk that's going to happen with the play action fake, is that you are going to take hits. Part of that's the NFL. Kyler is a guy who, by having stuff in front, he can at least react or go down. That is going to be something that we're going to have to see as far as trust. I think that's something that we'll find out.
I'm gonna have to sign out. So he's been dying to say hi to you guys.
Yeah, baby.
Absolutely. Good to see you guys. Hey, right, we're just about done with everything, at least for the most part today, too. But yeah, take care, Marcos. You have a good one, sir.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Teach our last thing. Yeah, teach him the footwork. Last question I think we had is the Cardinals Mount Rushmore. So obviously we can talk about, if we need to, we'll go into our show later in the week with Marcos. Kyler, a lot of people are anticipating he could come off of the player unable to practice list either this week or next week, and fitting with that time frame of maybe around November, maybe the Falcons game seems to be what's been beneficial. I think it depends also on how he does in practice, because you don't want to bring him into the game where he's having to rep the places, the footwork, and it's not fitting with where you're at with Josh Dobbs, because you want to make sure that the team is still having the best chance to go out and win the game. And if you're like, yeah, Kyler, you got to work on this footwork, buddy, because Jobs can sell that play action fake. Yours is not quite up to par yet. It may take a couple of practices, a couple of weeks at minimum, before I think that they're going, essentially, they're not going to just throw him out there. We'll see, at least. I've said that that's the time frame that's been expected, but there's so much that goes into it that it's really going to be kind of once they see him over time, if it fits the plan or not. That's all stuff I think we can talk about later. That's something that I don't even know if we'll have in the next week or so that we know. One thing we do know, I think, though, is the Cardinals Mount Rushmore. I think that there are three people on the Cardinals Mount Rushmore, that I don't think are negotiable. I think that you obviously have Larry Wilson, I think, is the first one as far as like the original Cardinal, if you had to put it in that regard. I think that Pat Tillman, just not just the person and player he was on the football field or the story at ASU, but the legacy that he has had, I think is huge, and he wouldn't want anything to do with it. Let's be clear. It's just that's the type of person he was. Larry Fitzgerald, of course, being probably the greatest Cardinal who's ever stepped foot on a football field. And the question, of course, then is who would or should be the fourth? Joe, let's start with you, and then we'll go to Walter on who is that fourth member of Mount Rushmore.
So as it stands, it's probably Adrian Wilson. That's probably who I have to go with there. Some of, you know, there's some other players, you know, that I think are in the conversation. I think, you know, Larry Centers is in the conversation. I think for that, I think you have to at least think about Kurt Warner, even though his time was brief, you know, what he did taking the Cardinals to the Super Bowl and helping revitalize this team. But if I have to go with, and then certainly, you know, Buda Baker is going to be in the conversation as well. But today, October 16th, when we are recording this, I have to go with Adrian Wilson as that fourth person.
Walter, who you got?
Great call, Joe. It's so difficult because I have so many fond memories of great players and, you know, going back to the old days too. I mean, I'll just say the guy that got me most excited of all time, just breathtaking, was Mel Gray. I just loving watching him play football. It was like Reggie Jackson at bat. I mean, that he just brought a presence and an electricity. I mean, and Roy Green too was amazing. I mean, his versatility was incredible. But Mel Gray could run like the wind, and he had Velcro hands, and you could lay it out to him and he would run under it. And, he made some of the greatest catches too, clutch catches of game-winning plays that I ever saw. I loved it back in the old Busch Stadium days with the games there. And so I'm just going to take a flyer, pun intended, on Mel Gray.
Yeah, that's a fun one, at least, too. I think that we got some good comments, at least, that are here. We've got ones for Larry Fitzgerald, having Larry Centers the one from Red Sea. Also, Red Sea had talked about Dan Dierdorf, another great name. Now, the one that I think there's plenty. If I had to pick a, like, emotional type of aspect for me, as far as for where we saw the Cardinals presently, you think emotionally I would feel like Kurt Warner would be there, and he identifies as a Cardinal and brought the Arizona Cardinals to a Super Bowl. But I'm going to go with probably who I think would be the best player who, as far as a Cardinal, was also a Ram, and I would probably take Aeneas Williams, which is something that Jake also had suggested. I think that when you're talking about the play of what a shutdown corner was, as far as for importance to the NFL in general, the fact that he was a Cardinals member, he just wasn't on, I think, the winningest teams as far as it went. But I do think that as far as for players, for all-time Cardinals, he's probably going to be my pick that's there, even though the part of me that would secretly want to say, like, it's going to be a quarterback. I think that we still haven't seen a quarterback have truly the longevity and the success as far as being a Super Bowl winning quarterback. It's something we've seen the longevity and success through Cardinals past quarterbacks, like Jim Hart for longevity, and then for success, we've seen championship game appearances, we've seen a Super Bowl appearance with Kurt Warner. We haven't quite seen that Super Bowl winning quarterback yet. I think that maybe someday that person, if it's Kyler, if it's going to be someone else 50 years from now, who knows, I'm not going to be around at least when that happens, potentially. Hopefully that we all will be. That's one of the cases. But I think at least in the meantime, I would go with Aeneas. Another question that someone had talked about that I thought was interesting was, and I'd written this in my notes, Calais Campbell just had his 100th sack. I don't feel like that he's someone that ends up on that Cardinals Mount Rushmore, but I think a Cardinals Ring of Honor, considering how he's been one of the most underrated players of all time, I think, in the NFL for being dominant. And we really, I think, didn't get to see it, or at least on a national stage outside of that Super Bowl year, until the Carson Palmer team went and made it that far in the playoffs, until he went to the AFC Championship game with Jacksonville. He's a player who had just, after age 30, seemed like he aged like fine wine. And I think that that's something that's really fun as far as with him. And then Dansby being a part of that team three times, obviously, is something that I think deserves mentioning as well. But I just don't think any of those guys measure up to where Aeneas Williams is.
Well, put it this way. After Calais left, have we seen, you know, so did our 3-4 defense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been awful. Yeah, the only closest player to replace that would probably have been J.J. Watt, because Zach Allen, he's been solid in his role, but as far as being a true star who was out there, we got J.J. for two seasons at least, and obviously neither season went how Cardinals fans wanted, one without J.J. and one with him being able to get that last good year, the two sacks and the standing ovation as he kind of moved into a new ambassador for the game type of role. I'm still around in Arizona. But like you said, it's something that I think we'll have to look forward to. The Cardinals have a lot of draft picks. Here's hoping that whether it's through free agency or the draft, they can kind of find that next impact defensive lineman coming in. Thank you guys so much for those who have tuned in. If you guys want to at least shout out to where people can find your content, I think Joe, if you want to go first, and then Walter, and I'll wrap this up here at the end.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at JOKOMO13, JOKOMO13. And you can find me on YouTube at The Cardinal Rule, where I do Arizona Cardinal stuff.
Huge subscriber of that. And the professor is, you know, par excellence. I mean, his videos have it all. Blake, I was really impressed with you with the video components you put up there today. You're taking a page out of Joe Pro's book. I'll tell you, it's really good stuff. You can find me at WBJ Mitch on Twitter, at revengeofthebirds.com. I write almost every day an article. And then at Red Rain Podcast on Spotify and Apple and what was the other one? Spotify, Apple.
I think there's like iHeart, or there's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Not Google Podcasts, though. That's going away.
Yeah. There it is. Thanks so much for inviting me. It's always a pleasure and an honor to be with you guys, and love to do it again sometime.
For sure. Yep. Make sure you're following us at the Redbird Reboot. Especially make sure you're following our YouTube channel. We'll go live at least every time. We're going to start scheduling some of our shows out so you at least get notified with that ahead of time, similar to how Joe the Professor, you do it as well. I'm Blake Murphy on Twitter at BlakeMurphy7. This has been the Redbird Reboot. It's been an awesome show with the great debate, but that's it for us. So now it's time for us to log off. Take care, everyone.
Bye, Larry.